welcome to the Ramblecast. It has been a good solid month, maybe a little bit more, since we last had an episode. And there's a couple of reasons for that. I am your host, Chris Cesarano, and I've had a combination of being down in the dumps for a lot of reasons, and one of them has been just kind of falling out of love for video games and the industry and everything in general for a little bit of time there. It's a phase that happens once in a while. I mean, I think everyone gets it. Such as Jerry, do you get it once in a while?
I do sometimes. Not for a little while now, but yeah, it happens to everybody, I think.
And how about you, Woodward?
Yeah, I certainly do. You know, you do what you can to push it back and to reengage, but from time to time, it does happen.
Yep. So, and honestly, oddly enough, of all things, E3 actually brought me back into love of games again. I now want to really write about them again. I want to just start playing them again. I just like, it's all video games. After reading like 2.5 books for a solid month straight, I am finally bringing my 3DS on the train with me to work. So I can
good to palate cleanse sometimes, you know?
Yeah, basically. And it is good to actually read books once in a while, like, because most of what I would read is just the writing on games websites, and, you know, I mean, it's not like I'm really all that much better, but there's just, you need to read some actual good writers once in a while in order to just remember what it's like to read good writing, so to speak. Anyways, we're discussing E3 this week, and we might actually do it for the next episode as well. I don't know how much we want to touch on or are going to touch on. Right now, we're basically, like, the list we have in front of us of notes is just the big three presentations. We didn't have EA or Ubisoft. As far as I'm aware, Konami didn't even do a stream this year.
They did not.
That's actually kind of a shame, but I was actually hoping more companies would start doing their own little live streaming events, because Konami did it, like, even before E3 last year. So I guess maybe the company just doesn't have enough they're working on. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they were discussing that on, I think it was Giant Bomb or somewhere else. Giant Bomb's been almost exclusively the site I've been following for E3 this week. And yeah, I think it was mostly that other than Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes, which is already out, like talking a bit about the next full Metal Gear, which won't be till probably late next year, and their latest annual soccer game, they don't have much they've talked about recently. So I don't know. They might be able to do much other than say, we're working on things.
Yeah, it's a possibility, because they just came out with a bunch of their latest Castlevania things. And you know, once upon a time, they teased Contra for the 3DS, and then it just vanished.
Yeah, completely. That would have been awesome.
That would have been awesome. No, but overall, I mean, basically, and most of what EA and Ubisoft showed was the same as Microsoft's and Sony's presentations, so I guess not too, I mean, we'll have most of all of the big stuff covered. Now, I don't know about you guys. I've actually been keeping up mostly with YouTube streams this whole week. Nintendo and Sony have been live streaming to YouTube. I think it's also to Twitch and everything, but they're the only companies that have been doing it to YouTube. And honestly, I prefer YouTube over Twitch. Twitch is much more annoying with how it delivers ads. And
yes,
I'm just not a fan of the interface for Twitch all that much, so I kind of avoid it when I can, so
I'm just typically don't have the time just to sit down and watch something long-form content, and the Twitch mobile app just sucks, and it has since it first came out.
Yeah. Well, I think the idea that they're doing is really cool, though, which is all these, you know, Nintendo did have their sort of equivalent of a press conference, which was a longer video, but then they're also having all these smaller things, which are not super long, so they're reasonably easy to consume, you know, later on if you, you know, want to watch a bunch of stuff when you get home from work or whatever, I think. And it's interesting because Giant Bomb, actually, like a lot of people have been saying, oh, Nintendo's not holding a press conference. This is the, you know, another sign of their desperation and how they're doomed. Yeah. And it was very interesting that the Giant Bomb guys actually said, you know, they actually like E3 quite a bit, but they've all been saying that, you know, maybe this whole idea of more directly communicating with your fans is the way this whole thing is going. And maybe Nintendo's actually you know, a company that is often criticized for being very slow and not very progressive, they're kind of saying maybe they're kind of out in front on this one. Like, well, maybe this is what everybody's going
to
do soon.
Can someone please link the Giant Bomb guys to the Direct Approach article I wrote for Gamers with Jobs last year and be like, you guys are behind. Someone else saw it first. And it was me.
I know we're going to get to some of the actual content in terms of games that were announced or that were discussed or shown. But I would say across the board, I felt like Nintendo was the most on mark. They did a lot of things really, really right this year.
Oh, man.
They did.
Yeah, dude.
Absolutely.
I ended up watching their press conference twice, actually, because it was just that. I mean, part of it actually helps that it was less than an hour. My first response to the length of the digital event was, wow, that's it? That's super short. Like, where's the rest of it? You know, everyone else was like, hour and a half to 2 hours. But when... it was easier for me than to sit down and watch it again with my roommates because it was like, dude, everything in there was good. Everything in there was entertaining. And, you know, sitting down to watch it with them, like, just the attitude Nintendo had about it just had us all, like, enjoying the conference. Like, Sony, like, even my roommate who, you know, he is a self-admitted Sony fanboy. He loves all the Sony devices. He recently got himself a Vita. He's got the PS3. He wants the PS4. Like, he just likes PlayStation. And he got a little bit bored with the Sony press conference. And
oh, there was so much filler.
Was less interested. And then we're all sitting there watching the Nintendo one, and it's just, we're all loving it because Nintendo... Did anyone confirm who did the little claymation shorts? Because they look very much like Robot Chicken.
It was Robot Chicken.
It was Robot Chicken. I thought so, because it's that style. So they get Robot Chicken to do this self-referential humor, self-aware humor, that basically pokes fun of their past conferences, and of course pokes fun with the typical audience, the typical games journalist that's like, you know,
come
where's
on,
this
Reggie,
game?
Give us Mother 3.
Yeah.
That was so good.
Lights Mode. What about Star Fox? No, like, that stuff was beautiful. But even then, like, it opens up with Satoru Iwata and Reggie Fils-Aimé having a Matrix-style brawl with each other. Which then, of course, leads into an announcement for Smash Bros. But, like, we're just watching. It's like, these guys are just having fun. Like, they stopped putting on airs. They stopped trying to put on a conference like everyone else. And they're now, like, they had the best presentation, probably for the least amount of money, that was just the best for...
Yeah. And you know what I love, and I've said this before about Nintendo, but they really, really showed it this year. I don't know if either of you guys, did you see that picture that's been circulating around today of Miyamoto demoing Mario Maker to those two young kids?
Oh, I've seen it. They look
that,
absolutely
like,
delighted.
When I look at stuff like that and what they did in their press conference, I was like, you know, this is a multi-billion dollar, like, 100-plus-year-old super corporation, basically, and the people running the show... You can tell, like, they're super casual. They don't have a problem being goofy. They don't take themselves too seriously. And you can tell that they actually really love what they're talking about. I'm like, why aren't more businesses run by people like this?
Just like, to add fuel to that fire, also, I would add the photo of Miyamoto using the Oculus Rift.
Yes.
Which you can't possibly look sillier than when you're wearing an Oculus Rift.
I haven't seen
it. And again,
picture.
Like, I totally agree with you. That, and I also agree with something you tweeted earlier, Jerry, that in terms of, you know, executives, he and Adam, what's the last name at Sony?
Well, there's Adam Boyes, and the big kahuna there in charge of developers is Shu Yoshida, and
sure,
he actually went on one of Giant Bomb's live shows, where, like, the one of those live shows where everyone's half drunk and crazy, and he totally rolled with it, and I'm like,
absolutely.
This is a corporate executive of, like, a massive conglomerate. That's amazing.
Hey, man, that can be some really awesome stuff, you know, and I think part of it, too, might in some ways be, you know, for certain aspects of business, you know, Japanese are very serious. But then, like, there are also aspects where it's about letting loose, even with your boss and everything. I don't know too many details about it. I've discussed it a bit with my brother. You know, the most common stereotype is, you know, they're all serious and hierarchy-based during work hours, and then afterwards they all drink together and get loose. But, like, I don't know the specifics, what's accurate, what's not, but...
I mean, they're showing this publicly, like they're really showing themselves as not stiff suit types, you know, which Nintendo did for a long time, actually. They came, you know, yeah. Their press conferences in the past were often very painful and very corporate feeling. But this one was just like, no, you know what? We're a company that's about fun, and we're going to show that even our, you know, multimillionaire top guys can be fun as well, which I thought was really refreshing.
And that's the thing. I feel like they've kind of they're continuing to learn. And I think they really are one of the reasons I've enjoyed this E3 the most in a long time. Because, and I'll admit, I mean, I was enjoying it from day one. I was enjoying the Microsoft and Sony press conferences. I mean, by Tuesday morning, and when I found out there was a Destiny bundle, because I missed part of the Sony presentation on that, because, I don't know, the stream was doing terribly. We had to go onto the PlayStation 3 and use it on their terrible web browser or app or something. It was just riddled with technical difficulties for us. But like, I missed that they had the Destiny bundle, and I was like, oh man, I'm gonna like reserve it, and over the summer I'm gonna put money down on it over, like, just gradually. And then I watched a Nintendo conference, and I was like, oh man, never mind. I need money for Nintendo games. Like,
yeah,
PlayStation 4 can wait.
And that's the thing that I found really refreshing about this week is that, at least for me personally, I found stuff from all three of the major players, and you know, a lot of this which can transfer into even people who are PC centric as well. I found a lot from all three of the major players that, for me personally at least, got me really, really interested and in what I saw. And yeah, like, all three of the companies this year, like, there was. I found in the last couple of years there's been a lot of cynicism amongst the game press and stuff with regards to E3, and there was no shortage of that leading up to it this year. But I really found that all three of the major players this year did exactly what they needed to do, which is, Sony wasn't perfect at this, but they were better than usual. It was not a bunch of stiff, boring business crap. For the most part, it wasn't talking about non-game stuff. It was just, hey, we've got an hour and a half. We are going to bombard your face with game announcements.
Yeah, but I think Sony has never really recovered from the loss of Kevin Butler either. I do not. I mean, this year was quite clear. They do not have a good stage presence when it comes to a person. Like, and it is funny how much that is underestimated. Like, Microsoft, for the most part, just, they didn't have people on stage much. They let the games mostly do the talking this year. Just had the demonstrations, had the trailer or the demo, and then the people were there to give some details. And Ubisoft discovered long ago with Aisha Tyler that if you get someone that the audience loves and just keep bringing them back, like, it took them forever to do that.
Caffeine is what finally learned them that lesson.
Yeah. I mean, basically, they finally found someone that, you know, now they keep bringing her back because she's charismatic, she does a good job, she's actually amusing for people.
She's, you know, really good at it. She makes the show much more entertaining to watch. Like, she makes it feel less like a press briefing.
Yeah, so, and now Nintendo's found their voice, which is, they're just a bunch of guys playing around all day, which, or at least that's the way it feels when you watch it. I mean, I guarantee you, you know, once they go back to work on Monday, it's back to work on Monday, but it feels more like they actually love their job, they love what they're doing, and you can feel the love of what they're making, too. Whereas Sony just came off really cold, with the closest bit of personality coming from the Grim Fandango remaster reveal. Like, that was the closest thing to me to have actual personality through the whole thing, and part of it was because it was Tim Schafer. I mean, come on.
Yeah. No, I think Sony had, presentationally at least, I think, yeah, Sony had the weakest presentation. I think they're doing a lot better than they used to do, but I also think, yeah, it's like you said, like, a lot of the guys that they have up there speaking, I think Andrew House is his name, the British guy. I think he's the one who comes across as the most relaxed and most charismatic of the other guys. Like, you can tell, especially the new guy they have running Sony America, he definitely the first thing I said when I saw him come up was, oh man, this dude is nervous.
Yeah.
and he definitely came across that way. But yeah, they and to be honest, after the massive mic drop that they had at last year's show, really,
they didn't have one this year, really. But,
well, and the thing is, expectations, I don't think they could overcome the expectations set by just completely kicking Microsoft in the throat last year.
Yeah.
But it was good. I mean, if you take, I think presentationally, everything was very refreshing compared to what we normally would expect from those three companies and what we've seen before, which was good because it made, I found that people were talking less about the shows, the press conferences themselves, and more about what was shown in them, which I think is good because that's ultimately what we're there to see, right? And they all had a lot of good stuff to talk about.
Well, just sorry to suddenly derail, but I just realized, you know, I think part of the reason actually, like by the end of Monday, after watching all the press conferences, I actually wasn't very certain. I was starting to actually want an Xbox One, basically, and I was less interested in a PlayStation. Like, nothing at the Sony conference made me want a PS4 specifically.
Yeah.
Just stuff that made me want a next-gen system. And I think part of it is, when you count, like, the exclusives that Microsoft has, like, even ones that I'm not interested in, like, they got Forza Horizon 2, which I really could care less about. They have, Sunset Overdrive, which looks like Tony Hawk meets Crackdown or Infamous meets, you know, third-person shooter party point-scoring horde mode game. Like, it looks pretty crazy, and it's pretty damn colorful, too, and it actually has an art style. Then you combine with the Super Ultra Dead Rising 3 Arcade Remix Hyper Edition EX Plus Alpha Prime.
Which, title of the century.
Dude, that makes me want Dead Rising 3 more than Dead Rising 3 makes me want Dead Rising 3.
Me too, actually. And yeah, that was what I would also say is arguably one of the better trailers of the year, too.
Oh,
was,
definitely.
When they dropped that. I actually laughed at a trailer, which never happens.
When Capcom wants to, they can have a great sense of humor, too.
They can.
Fable Legends, Project Spark, like, even the whole Halo series, and then what is there anything Scalebound? Like, all of these games are bright and colorful, and for the most part, they're pretty varied. In fact, the only exclusive of, like, there are two shooters in there, and only one of them is a first-person shooter, and it's only because it's Halo. So of all the exclusives they showed this year, that's like six of them, two of which are shooters. So that's four games that are not, but they're all colorful. They're all colorful games and everything, and they're all very varied. But now let's jump over to Sony, and we have, of their exclusive games, we have The Order 1886, which is a third-person shooter that's kind of horror-based and very, you know, dark. You have Bloodborne, which is very violent-looking and dark and bloody.
Little Big Planet 3.
LBP 3.
Okay, Little Big Planet 3. We have one colorful platform game.
Entwined, Entwined has a pretty nice color to it, if nothing else.
Yeah.
All right, they do have, well, that's the thing. I actually excluded the one indie game. What was it? Ori and the Blind Forest from Microsoft. I'm talking like the big hits at the moment.
I gotcha. Which I would say, yeah. Ori the Blind Forest looks pretty dark.
It does. It's that kind of independent, like, oh, it's pretty, but it's got all the feels. You know, all that kind of a thing.
I know it's smaller, but Well, I was just saying, because in addition, real quick, not only do you have Entwined, but also on Sony you have Abzu, which again, very small game, but from some of the people from that game company. So, you know, but certainly you only found really, you know, splashes of color when you're looking at some of the smaller games on Sony.
No Man's Sky as well, which is first, it's not an exclusive, but that game is surprisingly colorful for the type of game it is.
Oh yeah. But you know what, though? I'm actually looking, and I'm actually being a little bit unfair to Sony, but it's also partially because Sony's exclusive, like, new release, like, I'm also not counting Infamous First Light, which is an expansion to Infamous Second Son. But, you know, other than, if we're talking big hits, you have The Order, Bloodborne, Little Big Planet 3, and then you have Suda51's game, Let It Die, and aside from, oh, and then you have Ratchet and Clank. So yeah. We've got...
Which is just a remake.
Three horror-ish games coming that are all dark and bloody-looking, and then you have two family-friendly, colorful games, but for some reason, just based on the entirety of the show, I was under the impression that it was a lot more grim, like, just grim and dark than that, but, like, looking over it, that's actually not necessarily the case, but I don't know, maybe there was something about the presentation on the whole that made me feel that way, but, like, Microsoft, I felt like it was a greater variety, a greater sense of color, and while Sony had that as well, they do have variety. It definitely felt, I mean, both basically kind of feel like they're primarily targeting the, you know, M-rated 18 plus gaming market, but for some reason, maybe it's because Sony's was like 2 hours and at some point it all blurs together.
Well, it was 2 hours, like, and half of it was a thing about that Power series and media stuff. And
Powers wasn't that long of a talk.
Well, I would say that both of them are certainly going for an M-rated audience. For me, I certainly play M-rated games, but games just appealing to that audience overall interest me less. Really, what kind of appealed to me this E3 were the smaller games. That's kind of what I was looking for last year. And even though the big game Sony had, possibly outside of Far Cry 4, in general, didn't really do much to move me, the fact is they had an okay presentation on Devolver games. If you count The Color Red, Hotline Miami 2 looks very colorful. And then again, looking at Abzu and... looking at Entwine doesn't interest me, but at least aesthetically, there's something nice to look at. I do feel overall, I feel a little bit underwhelmed. One I forgot to mention is Grim Fandango, which I don't know if you could count that as an indie game, but certainly that coming to any console seems to be a project of passion.
Yeah. There's been some very interesting stories I've heard, mostly on Giant Bomb's live shows, about how the various people involved in making that happen with Disney's kind of got together and how it was kind of a weird set of fortunes that made that happen. It's very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I should comment though. Like I don't, like I'm not necessarily for like every game should be colorful, but I would love to see games that use more than, okay, we just got to make it look kind of depressing. Like, think about, what is it, Road to Perdition, where certain scenes are very heavily saturated in green, and other scenes are more desaturated of color, where they're almost black and white. There's just barely enough color there, which all, like, the different colors are meant to suggest different tones, whereas for a lot of video games, I mean, granted, this is filmmaking, so it's very much more focused. You have greater control over it, but I kind of wish video games you'd either have colorful, if you need it, like if that fits your art direction, or if it is your art direction, you know, brown, gray, dirty kind of a thing, or sometimes just explore with other colors kind of a thing.
I think that's the main thing, is that we're still, even now, like they're doing better with this stuff, but we're still largely surprised when a game makes extensive use of the available color palette now, which I think it's better than it was a couple of years ago, but it's still weird that, yeah, people have to be pleasantly surprised when they go, wow, this game has more than three colors in it.
Or you could also think of Remember Me and how prominent the color orange is in that game, or Mirror's Edge, Mirror's Edge 2, I'm hugely looking forward to. Look at how much that game is focused on, you know, travelable surfaces being white with special interactive objects being red, and then the sky is always a stark contrasting blue. Like, colors are, the graphics are meant to kind of look realistic, but an art direction is chosen, so everything has a defined look to it. So it's not just about, oh my god, be colorful, because, you know, you don't want everything to necessarily be blinding in the color palette, but you also, it's, you want art direction kind of a thing. Which, I mean, I'm not complaining about the games that are colorful either, it's just I would like to see a bit of both, and it felt like with Sony, there was a lot of games that were always going for shadows or fog or some kind of darkness to convey that it's like, this is a dark, horrifying story where people bleed and get cut apart or something like that, or whatever Suda51's new game is going to be. Let It Die.
Some of the stuff that they pushed, like they had a lot of more colorful stuff in their presentation, but the stuff that they did really emphasize as big sort of tentpole stuff, like Bloodborne, like The Order, definitely have a darker undertone to them, both visually and in general.
You know what really frustrates me? I haven't been able to see a good gameplay video of The Order this entire E3 yet. Like, I missed its entire presentation on stage, which was evidently just a trailer.
It wasn't very good. It was mostly cutscenes, and like they were clearly showing off this whole thing that they're bragging about with The Order, about how cutscenes literally roll right into gameplay with no transition because it looks so good that everything looks like a cutscene. And it's neat that they showed that off, but the thing I heard multiple people talking about after the fact was that, like, the presentation showed very little actual gameplay. Like, it looked like a Metal Gear Solid game in that it was mostly cutscene, like 5 seconds of gameplay and then more cutscene. And they were like, when we played it for Judges Week, there was definitely more gameplay to it than that.
And, you know, that actually amuses me because, I mean, just the idea that it's like, oh, look, it's all in-game engine. We don't have to go to a cutscene video. It's like, you know what? I remember Metal Gear Solid on the PlayStation didn't have to go to cutscenes. I remember Halo 1, all in-engine, all the Halo games for the most, well, Halo 1 through Reach, I believe, because those are all Bungie. They would have the flash or something to be like, okay, now we're in a cutscene, but it was all in-engine. It didn't require loading time. You just went to the sequence or something. Like, you know, it seemed like last generation we forgot that you didn't have to have pre-rendered cutscenes anymore, but everyone always wanted them to look really beautiful and everything. And it's like,
yeah,
if we finally get back to in-engine cutscenes, to me it's like, well, I don't know why we couldn't have kept it that way, but okay, you know, I'll take that as a point of goodness somehow.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, I hope that game is good, but I have seen a lot more cutscene and less gameplay in it than I would like to. I'm curious to see more of it.
Well, was it originally supposed to come out this year?
I believe it was. Yeah, I think it was one of the things that the many, many, many things that have been delayed to 2015.
That could be part of the reason that maybe the gameplay is at the moment is not up to snuff and ready yet. But then again, they had people playing there. And I think that was, like, as I said before, I've been keeping up with the Nintendo and Sony live streams on YouTube when I can. But, like, I tried switching over to the Sony one for a little bit. And it's funny how there are just small, tiny details of presentation that could really affect your enjoyment of something. Because I tried to watch the one for The Order, and they didn't really focus much on the gameplay. Like, the guy, the Sony host was just talking to the developer, but no one was playing the game. They would just occasionally switch over to people at the stations at E3, and they never seemed to be, like, they always seemed to be in a cutscene or something, and you never got a good view of someone playing the game. And
well, The Order is one of those games that I'm not sure why it has so much hype. I get that it looks very pretty, again, if you're into fog, and the gameplay itself doesn't sound particularly interesting to me. I've yet to be sold on the promise of that game.
I am too. Yeah. That's why I want
to
see
it. I haven't either. I want to know more. I want to see more of it, but yeah, it looks like, but what I've heard so far, based on what some people have seen of it, is that it's a very cutscene heavy cover shooter, which I'm kind of like, if that's all it is, then that's not going to grab me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I want to see gameplay. I want to see if this is something I should be hyped about. And you're right, I don't understand why other people would be either, other than the concept. But I mean, there are a lot of games that promise a good concept, and I mean, just look at some of the reception to Watch Dogs. Just about everyone I've seen playing it has been like, yeah, it's pretty good, but, you know, there's always the, you know, buts. There's always qualifiers. So it's like, I don't even know if I want to get that game when it finally comes out on the Wii U. Like, I might just be, you know, I might just skip over Watch Dogs.
Can't play every game.
No, you can't. And sometimes, like, it's like, you know what, Watch Dogs had a good announcement. It had a good announcement trailer, but then as time went on, and then it finally released, it's like, oh, you know what? The game's not as good as everyone was hoping it would be. And The Order might be the same thing. I mean, I saw the announcement trailer. I was like, this seems pretty cool, but you've yet to show me gameplay. And I'm not really all that interested at this point. I mean, that's the thing. Like, if this time next year, Nintendo's saying, okay, we have new information on The Legend of Zelda for you, for the Wii U, and they don't really show anything other than cutscenes, then I'm going to be like, okay, you guys had a lot of promise last year, and now you're not delivering.
That's the thing. It's going to be interesting to see because a lot of what was shown at least of that particular tentpole game was a lot of promise, but they didn't really say much in terms of what we can, you know, expect in terms of deliverable from it. So it'll be interesting as that gets closer to its release to see what happens with that.
Actually, you know what I just realized? No wonder Sony is really pushing Destiny as well, because The Order is now 2015. Uncharted 4 is not going to be until, what, 2016? Maybe 2015 at the earliest?
Like, who knows?
Depends on how many people continue to work at that studio at any given time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like most of the creative leads of that game have all disappeared, so I think that game is probably in a bit of a weird spot right now.
Possibly, but then like The Last of Us Remaster, I think, is the only exclusive thing they have coming out, like big tentpole game this holiday season.
I mean, this sounds silly, but I think Infamous First Light is kind of what they're banking on some. It seems like the new Infamous game is one of the few, if not the only game that I kind of hear selling some people on a PS4 right now.
Well, the biggest reason for me to get a PS4 right now is Infamous Second Son. And that's really the disappointing thing is after this E3, that's the only reason for me to get a PlayStation 4 right now. Is Infamous Second Son still.
And the thing is, I have a PS4 already because I managed to get one before I got laid off. But I quite enjoy it. But I'm glad I have it, but not necessarily glad. Like, after seeing what Sony presented, I'm glad I have a PS4, but I'm not necessarily glad that I have it this year in particular. I'm glad I have it. I'm like, okay, cool. There's good stuff coming for this. But if I didn't have one yet, I might not have bothered to go get one yet.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. Like for me, I wasn't expecting to want to get an Xbox One. I was expecting to make fun of the whole thing, honestly. I mean,
well, what did you see that really sold you on an Xbox One?
Honestly, from the first minute, Fable Legends. Like as soon as I heard they were making a 4-player Fable co-op game, I was already sold. But They showed some of it, and to me, it looks like what I've wanted. It's a fantasy-based 4-player co-op role-playing game kind of a thing, and I already like Fable's combat. I mean, even Fable 3, which is the only one I didn't bother to keep, like, I even liked that one to an extent for the combat. I think it was a lot of the latter game stuff that really failed for me, in addition to some of the earlier failings. But yeah. Fable 1 and 2, I mean, I love those games, and I'm really tempted to get Fable Anniversary this year. Versus, you know, and then you have, like, Fable Legends coming out with a 4-player co-op and optional, fifth player playing the villain, which I will comment, it is kind of a shame that Microsoft decided to completely ignore that they ever had a Kinect this year, because of all the times they could have sold the Kinect to a hardcore gamer, it was having someone use the Kinect when playing the villain in Fable Legends, because that actually looked a bit awkward with the control pad. And all I could think was, if you had a Kinect, you could just swipe with your hand. Like, you could just move across the battlefield, I imagine. And
I don't think that would have been enough, though, for them for that. And I think they decided, nah, let's just not spend the time to do that.
Well, I don't mean, like, highlight it. Just have it subtle. Like, just show the person on stage moving their hand. So it's like, oh, they're using the Kinect. Oh, that is actually a really good use for it. Versus,
That might have been neat, yeah.
I mean, because otherwise it just kind of looks awkward with a controller. And at that point, it's like, well, why do I want to play that mode?
But I think that's part of why they got rid of the Kinect before E3. They want you to forget about the fact that the Kinect exists.
Yeah. They want you to start. And that's the thing, too. One of the reasons I would get an Xbox One now, it's $400.
Yeah,
and that's the thing too. Like, I wouldn't have. Yeah, I had no interest in one with a Kinect in the box. But yeah, like there's enough. That's the thing is they sold me on getting an Xbox One eventually. But definitely, like, even if I could afford one right now, I wouldn't run out and buy it right now. Like, I think Sunset Overdrive looks awesome, and I'm a big Insomniac fan, so I'd play that.
I'm interested in that game too. I mean, I don't know if I would pay $60 for it, but I'm interested in Sunset Overdrive.
Looks very colorful. Hey, I'm curious if there's an interesting game there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm interested in that. I am really interested in Crackdown 3 because I absolutely loved the first Crackdown. But the funny thing is that when I look at the Xbox One and go, like, what do I really like about this? Because the funny thing is I'm a real big fan of playing just about anything in co-op. And there's a remarkable amount of what they showed at their press conference that can be very co-op focus. Like, Crackdown is a much better game in co-op. They said that Sunset Overdrive is going to have up to 8 player co-op in it. Fable's going to have co-op in it. Yeah, that's going to be crazy. Evolve is not really a co-op. Well, it is kind of a co-op game because it's 4-on-1. Evolve is going to have that. Assassin's Creed Unity is 4-player co-op and all of that stuff. But the funny thing that's kind of a bummer about that is the guys that I would normally play co-op games with have all kind of become hardcore PC people recently.
Yep.
So the exclusives on here that I would really love to play co-op with, I'm sure I could find a group of gamers with jobs people to do it with, but with the normal people I would play with, I was like, there's a bunch of great co-op games here, but the guys I play with are never going to buy this machine anyway.
Yep. And you know, kind of like, honestly, I think that was also Microsoft trying to keep reminding you that, yes, you do want to pay for Xbox Live so you can play multiplayer on their service, which...
Oh, yeah.
Technically, you know, Sony, you have to pay them on the PlayStation 4 as well. You have to pay for PlayStation Plus, but actually, that's the funny thing. Nobody really... Neither one of them really went over those kinds of offerings of free games coming up soon or anything.
No, but they seem to be good at hyping those as they come up.
Yeah, and this is also E3. It's all about looking forward, not looking behind, which is what, you know, the free games are.
And a segue from there, legitimate question. Everyone who's super psyched about Crackdown 3, why do you so easily cross over Crackdown 2? I mean, considering...
Because that was a different team. This is actually Crackdown 3 is being done by the guys who did the first one.
Awesome. That's what I was curious about. I wasn't sure if it was the original team or not.
It's at least the original head guy. Actually, it's not the original team because that developer went under after they tried to make APB. But apparently it's a lot of the original creative leads who did Crackdown 1. They have I forget the name of the studio now, but it's a weird name. But they're the ones doing it, and it's not Ruffian Games who did the second one. Because I never touched Crackdown 2 because I heard how horrible it was. But yeah, they made a point of saying this is the guy who did the first one.
I expected Crackdown 2 to be more of an albatross around the Crackdown franchise's neck, but definitely people seem willing and excited to give that franchise another try.
If they said it was being done by the same guys who did the second one, I'd have been like, nope. But they seem to know what people were looking for with a new Crackdown. So,
yeah. But I mean, that's the thing though. Like, even though Microsoft has a couple of, I mean, they have again. What was it? They have Fable Legends, which I'm interested in. I already like just like PlayStation has Infamous Second Son. Microsoft has Dead Rising 3, and that deal, I'm sorry. That Super Ultra Dead Rising 3 Arcade Remix Hyper Edition EX Plus Alpha Prime looks just more interesting to me than Infamous First Light. I mean, it does. So there's a little added reason there. The only thing that would have also sold me is the Halo collection of Halo 1, 2, 3, and 4. Which is funny because to me it's like, oh, you left out ODST and Reach. You know, you left out the good ones on
the 360. Arguably two of the best ones. Yeah.
I mean, granted, I did like Halo 4 well enough. Halo 3, for some reason, just angers me all the time just thinking about it. But actually, I can list off the reasons one by one. But either way, like, the only thing I want out of that box set is Halo 2 Remastered with the online co-op. That's it. And I would have to pay $60 for that entire collection. That's like forcing someone to buy Let me see if I can think of a film equivalent. That's like forcing someone to buy an entire Highlander movie box set just for the first movie.
Or to buy the to buy the Godfather 1, 2, and 3 when you only want the first two.
No, the third one is a terrible one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Well, that's the thing. You're at least getting two out of three there. But, like, the Highlander movies, it's like, do you really want any of them other than... Do you really want the first one, even? But, I mean... The cooler thing,
and I know business wise why they wouldn't do this, but the cool thing would be is if they actually came out and said, buy it all in a box for $60 or for like, I don't know, $20 a pop or whatever, you can buy the individual components of the collection on their own. Want Halo 2, you can buy that for $20 or get the whole box for $60.
I imagine eventually they'll have them in like $20 downloadable packs or something individually or whatever. That would not surprise me at all, but for the time being, they're probably going to want to push all of them out to you, and they're doing it as a way to get around, the lack of backwards compatibility, which,
and
again,
the massive delay of Halo 5 it's not a massive delay. They actually never promised it would be out this year, but a lot of people assumed it was, and now they're kind of like, well, here's something Halo related for now.
Honestly, I'm not surprised it's taken until 2016, but,
I think the Master Chief Collection is a smart thing. There are a number of people who are playing games now who never played the early Halo games. It's a good way to take what you have, up-res it, you know, make it so it runs on the Xbox One, and make some money, keep the franchise growing.
It's not even just that, because there are people that, just because Halo 2 is going to be back online multiplayer, might even buy an Xbox One just for that.
I don't think there's a question about it.
That's the interesting thing, is that it's not just a, hey, here's a thing if you didn't play Halo before. That thing is gushing fan service in terms of how they're technically implementing it, which is really neat, I think. And the fact that they're blending it all together where they can be like, hey, you can pick a playlist that includes maps from all four of the games, and it will load the appropriate engine for each map. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesomely crazy.
Well, they'd have to do that. They would honestly have to do that, because, I mean, they're doing the same thing with it as they did the Halo 1 anniversary, but they didn't have Halo 1's multiplayer online. It was just Reach maps. It used Reach's multiplayer.
And that's the thing, is this is all the original engines with all the original quirks of each game, which is one of the things I thought was really cool about Halo, was that the multiplayer was actually notably different between each one in terms of how everything worked.
And a lot of people really liked Halo 2's best, which is funny to me because with Halo 2, I liked the multiplayer, but it always spawned me right next to the person that just killed me. So, I mean, that was...
I think this is another really good way for a 343 to reach the audience and to get them behind them and support them for the next game that comes out.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I think it's definitely a smart thing, and it is a little interesting that one of the things that a lot of people are hyped about from the Xbox One conference is a repackaging of four old games, but at the same time, it seems to be, you know, a very passionate group who's excited about that, and you know, it is something you can only get on Xbox.
Yep. But, and that's the thing, though, when it comes to what you can and can only get, I mean, for the most part, I mean, I actually forgot to mention earlier, there's evidently some kind of downloadable Dance Central game coming out as well.
It's basically a new Dance Central that's going to be, it's basically a DLC shell, but it's a Dance Central based around the new Kinect technology, but it's going to be like, there's no story mode or anything, I guess. You just buy it and buy songs, and you can bring in all your old songs from the 360 games, which is smart.
Oh, that's good. That's a good idea. But, and here's actually a question. PlayStation Now is entering beta soon, and here's another thing that I actually thought of while putting our notes together. What if instead of getting a PlayStation 4, I just got a PlayStation TV? And just use PlayStation Now.
Well, PlayStation Now, at least from the way they're talking, I don't know if that's going to... I have a feeling that you're probably not going to be able to play a lot of PS4 content through that, because, that would gut their hardware sales. It sounds like it's going to be mostly be for older stuff, at least initially.
But they're jerks.
PlayStation TV actually interests me, funny enough, because, when I'm employed again, our hope is to replace our TV, and we want to take the old TV and put it upstairs in our bedroom. And I think that thing would be really cool because my girlfriend wants something up there to play various media services on, and it's going to do that. But at the same time, you know, if I feel like, playing something off the PS4 or an older game or whatever upstairs, I can just bring a controller, turn the thing on, and play that stuff up there as well. I think that's pretty cool for $99. It's a neat device. Like, I think it's going to be a very niche device, but I think it also might do better than a lot of people think it will.
Oh, I definitely think it'll do pretty decently. I mean, as I said, like, I just considered getting it. I mean, you're right, though. Like, they probably aren't going to put a lot of PlayStation 4 content on there because otherwise they're cannibalizing their own sales of a system. It's going to be something that they'll start to have eventually. Like, let's say, like,
it'll get there with old stuff.
Yeah, 2 years from now, Infamous Second Son will be on there, basically. But it'll only be after Infamous Second Son's already done with, and maybe when the next Infamous game is getting ready to release. Assuming they make another one.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, exactly. You know, kind of like how, similar idea of how, when sequels to a lot of games are coming out now on PC, previous ones end up in Humble Bundles, you know, stuff like that. Kind of easy PR.
Yep.
But all I got to say is Sony's subscription-based service to large catalog of old PS1, PS2 games, I will whip out my credit card right now if you give me that.
Speaking of kind of novel ways to approach a game, I at least what's been discussed so far with Far Cry 4 multiplayer sounds fascinating. The fact that with Far Cry 4, you will have, with the new version, you'll have 10 different invites. So you can invite players that do not own the game, and they'll download a chunk of content that's just the co-op only, and they can play co-op with you for a set amount of time. In terms of a way to introduce someone to a game or to hook people on content, that is super, super interesting.
And I'll be honest.
Brilliant. And if they make it so that there's just like, hey, do you like this game? Press this button to buy the rest of it. Like that's friggin' brilliant.
Dude, I'll also be honest, I might actually play through a Far Cry game if it has co-op. I mean, I've co-opted games that I'm not really too big on before. Borderlands. But, Far Cry 3, I enjoyed it well enough, but it got boring and repetitive to me. But you stick another player in there, you start doing things twice as fast, you know, making twice as much progress, and hey, maybe I'll actually play all of Far Cry 4.
It makes me sad.
I like Far Cry 3 a lot, but my co-op buddies and I, we heard that Far Cry 4 was co-op, and they were both like, what? Like,
it makes me sad that any future Far Cry game is not going to have the jank of Far Cry 2.
Yeah, probably not, sadly.
Honestly, though, when I saw the cover of Far Cry 4, and my first thought was, so you replaced Voss with this generic blonde white guy that looks kind of like my college roommate.
The good thing is, in the trailer, he actually looked kind of interesting. He won't be a Voss because Voss was the best, but he did actually sound pretty interesting.
I don't care. I don't know if Voss died or not at the end of Far Cry 3, but if you give me a game where he comes back as a villain again, I will totally buy that. Just make him the villain, and I will play that game.
Speaking of
this guy, looks like the kind of it's a weird word to say, but like the almost delightfully evil kind of villain that Voss was, where like this guy is an unbelievably sick bastard, but he's kooky and weird at the same time. It looks like they've got that with this guy too. I hope so.
Well, in some ways, it's also a little bit disappointing because, I mean, as I said, like, I looked at the cover and it looked like they just swapped the villain out, because even the background, I know it's taking place in the mountains this time, but it's like, okay, so it's a jungle. I mean, it looks like a jungle. It looks like the same game with better graphics. This time there's elephants. And that's the thing. Like, everyone's reacting really bigly, really big to, like, oh, man, this one's got elephants. What does Far Cry 4 have that Far Cry 3 didn't have? Well, it's got elephants.
Well, let's see. I mean, Far Cry 3, I really enjoyed the verticality of the maps. They were a complete pain in the ass. If you really wanted to explore an area, it took forever, and that was one of the few things that that's one of the things I like most about the game. If they can find another interesting solution to mountains, to having to travel a distance while you have these huge obstacles, if they could make that a little bit more engaging, I think that could be super interesting.
Oh, there you go.
And it's going to be much more pleasant this game.
And yet, honestly, even if this is a fairly iterative sequel where they're like, here's the sort of same kind of idea, but with, you know, different creatures and different vehicles and a different villain, to a certain degree, for me, that'll kind of be enough, because I had so much fun with Far Cry 3. And if you're going to say, here's the mechanics of that, but a different sandbox to play in, that I'd probably still dig that quite a bit. But yeah, it'd be neat to see if they go a little further with it than that, too.
But here's the thing, though, because, here's why I'm actually really... I'm not bothered too much by the fact that Nintendo still has yet to announce a new Metroid game. Because they've said before that they're not going to do a sequel if it's just, why they haven't done F-Zero. They're not just going to put out a sequel if it's something like, oh, yeah, we're just going to make another one, just higher res, maybe a couple more new features. They want to do something different now. I don't know if that's always how the case has been. I mean, because they're always going to have a new Mario game. They're always going to have a new Zelda game. But it seems like they're always trying to give it something to set it apart from previous games in some manner. And
what they showed of that potential upcoming Zelda looks like they're going way different this time.
I wouldn't say way different. I mean, we just know it's open world for the most part, but... I guess
it depends. It depends what kind of open world it is. If it's like a Skyrim-like open world where you're not gated heavily and you can kind of go wherever you like right off the bat, that would be a pretty big departure for Zelda.
I think it could be really interesting if they adapt what they did in the last Zelda game with inventory, the ability to rent items so that you could go to a dungeon. That whole idea of breaking the sort of singular progression with Zelda, if they have a way to kind of go one step further once it's truly open world, that could be super interesting.
Yeah, that actually wouldn't surprise me, because that actually did help open up A Link Between Worlds very much. I mean, there was still, I always found there to be a bit of a preferred order to the dungeons. I noticed some felt more difficult than others, but I talked to people and there was a couple of dungeons that I walked in and I got stuck, so I walked out and went to another one. It did afford that kind of value. So on one hand, there was a bit of loss to not just discovering all these, these new items and treasures, but at the same time, the dungeons were now more interesting to explore because you had the items right away. Every room was a puzzle, and you're right, you could explore any way you wanted to. So that could actually, in an open world console-based Zelda, that could actually be a fantastic idea. All I know, though, is they basically said, they're trying to go back to some of the open world feel of the original Zelda. And they showed a picture where he's you can go all the way to those mountains. I mean, the game looks beautiful. Hyrule looks, and it's funny too, because, I'm playing Wind Waker HD for the first time. There is a moment where you get to see Hyrule before there's a whole bunch of water all over it. And I remember seeing that and being like, I want to play in that game. I want to play in that Zelda game because that Hyrule looks beautiful. And then he snapped his fingers and you saw it and I was like, oh my God, my wish came true. It's like the Zelda game that I wanted to play is about to come out.
Yeah.
So it is actually... I am excited in that regard, but even then, as I was saying, it doesn't bother me that they didn't announce a new Metroid, because I know they're trying to make sure it's not just Metroid Prime again. They want to make sure it's a Metroid game that's going to stand out, be as good as it can be, and of course, they're dealing with HD, pipelines and everything like that, and hell, they might even be trying to spread their release schedule out, so they don't want a Metroid game the same year as they're coming out with a Zelda game, maybe. And granted, I think this year they are in some ways biding time. I don't think they have anything big ready this year. I think their biggest franchise game is going to be Pokemon Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, and even that's a remake. I forgot it. They got Smash Brothers coming out this year.
That's going to be huge, I think.
That is huge, yeah.
Especially, I can't believe the buzz around that game that has been generated even by people who don't typically talk about or are that interested in Smash Brothers, a lot because of that tournament they ran and just in other ways.
People showed up.
Yeah, it was absolutely massive, and it's generated, I've heard so many people, including guys from Giant Bomb, who really normally don't dig Smash Brothers that much, who are talking about it now because, it's apparently a really, really good game. And yeah, this tournament just kind of blew up. Like Nintendo themselves said, they were like, this is kind of amazing. We didn't expect this response.
Well, this sounds silly, I know, but to me, part of it, a lot of it, is that USB port where you can use your old GameCube controllers. It is ridiculous thing for them to do.
That's a love letter to the tournament scene.
Absolutely. It's what their audience actually wants. It makes no sense unless you're listening to your audience. And to me,
they were talking about, actually, you know, it's really funny you bring that up, because on the Giant Bombs, I think it was their first night live stream, they actually had Palmer Luckey, who is the founder of Oculus, on their show. And it turns out he is like an epic, like, Smash Brothers player, and he was actually talking about how he has like an original orange GameCube controller that's like his Smash controller that he has rebuilt four times, and he's actually filed down the start button so he doesn't accidentally pause while he's doing tournament play. Like, this guy was talking like wicked hardcore about it, and he was like that multi-tap GameCube thing is like the smartest thing they ever could have done. He's like, I'm interested in everyone I know who plays Smash Brothers is absolutely getting it at launch with that stuff now as a result. Like, it's a remarkably, like, progressive smart move to please a community that Nintendo up until this point has kind of permitted the existence of, but by and large kind of hasn't shown any interest in. And it's really amazing how quickly they've turned on that.
Yeah, someone on the Gamers with Jobs forums commented that, I think it was Clockwork House, she commented that Nintendo is sometimes late to things, but when they arrive with like just gusto, I guess. Like, and this was in actually regards to Splatoon, yes. Where I remember I remember being a little confused at first, and then watching it, it's like, oh my god, they took Team Deathmatch, made it family friendly, and just breathed new life into it.
Because... Yeah, Team Deathmatch and like a territory control, that's the weird thing about Splatoon is it, they not only made it family friendly, they actually, a company that has never up until this point understood online multiplayer at all, they actually did a mashup of two of the most popular genres in like the multiplayer, like military multiplayer shooter genre, which is Team Deathmatch and like domination, like territory control, and they actually mashed them up and made it work.
Yeah,
which and is crazy.
Like a friend of mine from college, like he lives in LA. He went to E3, and that was his first stop, was playing Splatoon, and he didn't get to see the E3 presentation. So he was like, I have no idea what this is. I'm just getting in line because you said so. And when he came, and I told him, you know, I was like, oh, I'm probably going to be terrible at the game when it comes out, but it looks fun. And that was his assessment. He was like, I was terrible at it, but man, that was a lot of fun. And evidently the buzz coming out of E3 has been, that's one of the big games of the show.
I also think, you know, with some of what they do in Smash Brothers to a minor degree, and what we're seeing from Zelda, they are marrying the increase in specs for their hardware with strong art design.
Yes.
In a way that we're not seeing from Sony and Microsoft in some ways, but that's why I'm so excited. Even Mario Kart 8, to be honest with you, I think that's part of the appeal to it, is that they are doing things that they wouldn't have been able to do on older consoles, but it still feels like it's part of the same cartoon world because they have such strong art aesthetics.
Yep. You know what's actually... There's only one downside I would say, which is Yoshi's Woolly World, which also has and that's the thing, Nintendo's doubling down in multiplayer as well, but in the right ways for each game. Like, now Yoshi's Woolly World has two-player co-op, but the only downside to me is that after watching Little Big Planet 3 with its little, you know, it looks like it's stop motion. The way the frame rates are done, it looks stop motion. And I kind of wish Yoshi's Woolly World had that as well. Because instead they all move like you would expect them to, you know, good frame rate and everything. But it feels like it should be stop motion. And that's where the Kirby, what is it? The Kirby's, where's my notes? Kirby and the Rainbow Curse. Like, that looks like claymation, and that has the stop motion look to it. But it all looks so beautiful. Like, they're not, they are trying different levels of looks and everything. Like, Zelda is cel-shaded. Splatoon is somewhere in between, but it's definitely got the art style. Hyrule Warriors looks as close to realistic, I think, as we're going to get. And it still looks, you know, gorgeous. It looks funny. You got all those enemies on screen. You can hookshot the moon from Majora's Mask down to kill a... Well, to bust a dragon to the floor. I mean, Hyrule Warriors looks like a lot of fun. But oddly enough, I'm most excited, actually, about Bayonetta 2 this holiday season. Aside from Smash Brothers.
Oh, my. I love the first Bayonetta, and I was so happy. I've had Bayonetta 2 on pre-order, discounted pre-order, since last year. And I was so happy to hear that, yeah, now you're going to get the first game as well.
Yep.
You know, up-resed over the original versions for the Wii U. I was like, that's just freaking awesome.
Up-resed, and you also get the costumes. Did you get to see the presentation where they discussed the costumes?
I missed that, unfortunately.
So, you might have seen it in the trailer a little bit, but when you have the Link costume, every time you get a key item, it makes the da-da-da-da. Every time,
of course, it does.
You unlock a door, and it makes the right tune. When they drop the when you kill an enemy, they drop like jewels or rings or something. Like, I don't even remember. They drop some kind of like treasure item, and when you pick it up, it makes the rupee sound from A Link to the Past.
Of course, so it does. That's just fantastic. Brilliant.
You get to use the Master Sword as your weapon instead of your usual physical attacks. When you're in the Samus outfit, instead of using your guns, you use the gun blaster on your arm. It's like every outfit is carefully done. And what was actually really funny was Platinum Games, like they were talking, they originally had an undershirt on Bayonetta when she was in the Link outfit. And Aji Aonuma, the guy who produces the Zelda games and everything, came over, looked at it, and he was like, "No, that doesn't fit the character. Take the undershirt out." Because it's like, this is Bayonetta. She won't have that on. And, they were surprised. They were like, oh, wow, we thought we'd get in trouble for not having that on there.
Yeah, so. it's really interesting. And, I mean, that's another, like, this is another reason why I think Nintendo has really become the talk of the show, is the fact that Bayonetta 2 is not only getting a chance to exist, but is being funded as an exclusive to what many consider the family console, as it were, and is being funded by Nintendo is just absolutely nuts, not something you would ever expect from them. And the other thing that blew my mind in that same vein is the fact that
the
we found
third?
Out The Devil's Third, the which Devil's was supposed third. To be an Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 game that THQ was publishing that they dropped just before they went under, that, yeah, now a game that was never going to be on the Wii U is going to be exclusively on the Wii U, and Nintendo was actually, like, funding it. I was just like, where did that come from?
And you know what's really funny? I'm sorry. You know what's really funny, though? This means that the action game crowd that's into stuff like Devil May Cry and into stuff like Ninja Gaiden and into all those action games, maybe God of War. I always felt like God of War is a little felt slow in comparison. I don't know. I was never a big fan of it.
It's not quite as fanatic as stuff like Bayonetta.
But that's the thing. Like, if you're a fan, especially of old Devil May Cry, like the platform you want evidently now is the Wii U, because it's got Bayonetta 1 and 2 on there. And now it's going to have The Devil's Third, which is the new Itagaki game. And especially after Ninja Gaiden 3 was met with less than stellar reviews and everything, like, I think people are going to be hungry for a new game by Itagaki. And, dude, it looks... I saw that trailer. I really wish they put that in the press conference at some point. Like, I wanted them to highlight that, because I feel like that'll slip under people's radar. And even though I hate the look of the protagonist, like, I don't know why muscular bald dude with tattoos all over him just doesn't, like, I don't know. It's
very Itagaki, but yeah.
It is very Itagaki, and it's like, very, like, 80s action hero, I guess, but yeah. Like, the game just looks fantastic. It looks fun. I want to play it today.
Yeah. And it's funny because I have a friend of mine who is big into, like, he's a huge Bayonetta person. He's beaten it multiple times. He's beaten Ninja Gaiden I don't know how many friggin' times. He's huge into those kinds of games. He also has less than no interest in the Wii U. And I told him, he knew about Bayonetta 2 and he was kind of grumbly about that. And I was like, hey, look, Devil's Third's coming there too. He's like, are you friggin' serious? He's like, damn it, now I gotta maybe buy one of these.
Dude, well, oh man.
I think it's great that Nintendo's backing these games. I think it's fearless. Because one thing we saw on the Wii is the Wii had some really, really great games that should have appealed to the hardcore, and they simply didn't buy them. No, so I'm hoping that the cycle changes this time. I'm going to wait and see, but I really hope that people buy these games.
The biggest problem was, too, on the Wii, original Wii, I think, is that those more hardcore-centric titles, like, I played a lot of those because I knew to seek that stuff out, but, like, the problem was that Nintendo just never really gave those games their due, and they never gave them any hype. And that seems to be different this time. Like, they may not have put Devil's Third in their main briefing, but they're talking it up, and they're actually spending, they're backing that up with spending their own money on it, which I think is really cool. And
chances are they're going to have a Nintendo Direct in the. I mean, that's the thing. They have the Nintendo Direct like at least every other month, if not every month, yeah. And they're probably going to have one where they at least showcase the game. A little bit. I mean, hell, they might actually have. You know, now that I think about it, I mean, the way they've been doing their Nintendo Directs, they'll probably have one not only before the holiday season, but during the holiday season to cover the different games coming out. Like, they'll they might have a half hour presentation dedicated just to Bayonetta 2.
That's smart because that's what they need, because the people who want to know about that game will tune in to see it, and a certain subsection of other people who might not have otherwise known about it will tune in because they're just Nintendo fans.
And even if people don't tune in,
I think that'll be cool.
Dude, even if people don't tune in, all that Nintendo Direct information always gets to the press and always gets brought out, even if somehow Polygon will find a way, or Kotaku will find a way to talk about how the Wii U is doomed and they really should just start making third-party games. But
yeah, I think I think the one thing I really took out of this E3, at least with regards to Nintendo, that I think is actually a good thing is, and this is where I think you can say that their recent problems have actually been a good thing, at least from the perspective of a game consumer, is the fact that it has really shown, because Nintendo has rode so high for so many years that to a certain degree they got a little bit complacent, and I did think they got a little bit safe and, dare I say, even lazy. And I think their recent troubles have really shown, like, getting their back pushed against the wall has made them do different stuff and has made them aggressive and has made them come out and do a bunch of stuff that, you know, if the Wii U was doing as well as the Wii and they were, you know, it was printing money for them, I wonder if they'd be doing this and some of this stuff. And I think it's very good that they had to get a little bit vicious. They had to, you know, they had to claw back what they had to claw their way back into the public consciousness, and they seem to be doing a pretty good job of it.
And I do think they are kind of walk. Oh, I forgot to mention they have Mario Party 10 coming out too, which even looks like, I have never played a Mario Party game in years. I don't even remember the last time I touched one. It might have been the N64 era, actually. And the new one actually looks interesting because you have the one player on the gamepad causing everyone else agita for the most part, like just irritating them.
I've never dug Mario Party, but yeah, this could be an interesting one.
But the thing is, I mean, Nintendo's always kind of had their way of learning from the past. I mean, they've always experimented. I mean, you had like Virtual Boy, they had their little satellite thing, which is their own online network in Japan and everything. The thing is, you don't always learn the right lesson from them, such as after that experiment in Japan failed, they were determined that online play was a fad, and they didn't realize that it was going to become a permanent fixture. But they still learn. And you're right. I mean, if the Wii U was more of a success, would we be seeing what we're seeing now? I really don't know how to tell you that, because I'm going to be honest, I do feel like
nobody knows. It's a guess, right?
I mean, the 3DS and the Wii U, when I play the games, really do feel like they're doing a better job than, like, they're, I mean, this feels like the best work of Nintendo since the Super Nintendo for me. And part of that, though, I think might also be just simply from feedback. I mean, what was the problem with Mario Kart Wii? Well, the problem, for the most part, was simply that it was too chaotic. The blue shell was all over the place, you know. It had all these complaints, and then in Mario Kart 8, just about every one of them is addressed. And now we have the best Mario Kart game potentially ever.
Yeah, many would say ever, for sure.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing, too. Like, I don't even think about it when it comes to the blue shell anymore, because it doesn't happen that often. It happens often enough that you know it's a ever-present threat, but you don't really get it multiple times per race, definitely not. I've had it, like, times where I might have only seen it once in an entire cup race.
Yep.
So they've really, like, they've kind of turned it back where it's like the Wii, I think a lot of their design philosophy was, how can we make it so even if you're terrible at games, you could come out on top? Which is how Mario Kart Wii and even in some way Smash Brothers Brawl felt.
Yeah.
Whereas this generation, it feels like they toned that back, so it's like, okay, let's keep it skill-based after all, but still keep that accessibility that we're known for. Yeah. And it's done them wonders, man. The 3DS games, the Wii U games, like, they're firing on all cylinders, and I hope that in the long run, the Wii U is a successful console.
I do too. I mean, it's always going to be in a very distant third place, but Nintendo has always said before, too, that they don't necessarily care if they're number one, because you can still make money when you're not number one.
Sure. Oh, yeah, and they've always, you know, they have their treasury, they have their pile of cash that they're sitting on, their reserves and everything, and granted, they're probably going into their reserves now, but that's the thing, they are a safe company that's somehow imaginative and likes to do new things. Like, I honestly have to wonder in some ways how they do manage to make as much money as they do, but it's like, you know what, they're quality, and I've actually said before, you know, they make so many games, and everyone always, like, that's the thing, like, how many games did they just announce that they're funding? Like, they're funding Xenoblade Chronicles X, aren't they?
I believe they are.
Yeah, I mean, just about everything they covered there, they got Super Smash Brothers they're developing two versions for, their new Amiibo figures they're putting out, Yoshi's Woolly World, Captain Toad, the new Legend of Zelda, the Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire, Bayonetta 2, Hyrule Warriors, Kirby Rainbow Curse, Xenoblade Chronicles, Mario Maker, Splatoon, and they have a Star Fox game. That is how many? 13 games that we know of right now. Oh, wait, no. The 14, because they also have the Project Steam that they're working on.
Yeah, and we should mention, by the way, as well, that the vast majority of those 14 games that they talked about this E3 are for the Wii U, not the 3DS.
Yeah, like, actually,
the system that is not doing very well and that many are already calling a complete failure is the one where they just kicked a ton of games out for.
But the same thing happened last year.
They could have just hung back and rode the 3DS success and just said, let's build on this wave and kind of ignore the Wii U, kind of like Sony's been doing with the Vita. But they went, no, we're doubling down on this home system that you're all saying is a failure, because, damn it, we're going to make it not a failure.
Well, that's what they did last year. Everyone had already written off the 3DS, and they came out with a slew of solid 3DS games that sounded interesting. The 3DS is not a joke anymore.
No.
It's successful because they doubled down, because they realized what they needed to do to make it successful was to put good games on it, period.
Software moves hardware.
But that's the thing. That's 14 games we know that they're developing right now, and this is not including stuff that, you know, they didn't show at E3 at all that's still coming out this year, or stuff that we know, like, Retro Studios is making a game.
Yeah, well, now that they're done with Tropical Freeze, they're making something, and it's probably not another Donkey Kong game, so...
Yeah, they're making stuff, so it's like, we know they've got all this stuff, and meanwhile, what are Sony and Microsoft working on? Not nearly as many titles. So, I mean, that's the thing that just amazes me. Like, I forget when I think it was the last Nintendo Direct that I realized it is, Nintendo is doing the work of not just a first-party studio, but at least, like, several other third party as well.
And one thing that Sony has, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I mean, that's just like, I mean, that's basically it. Like, that's it. Like, they're funding third party efforts. They're developing their own in-house efforts. Like, there's just so much that they're doing.
One thing that Sony really has going for it in terms of, it's not first party development, but in terms of console exclusivity, is talking to some of these smaller games and getting them on the PS3 first. PS4 first, excuse me, and thanks to the console parity clause in with Microsoft, those games can never show up on the Xbox One.
And a lot of them are kind of saying, you know what, we're kind of okay with that.
Yeah, I've spoken with, I actually spoke with a developer that was telling me about something like that, where he mentioned, I can't disclose his name or any of the other details, not at the moment. Actually, maybe I can, I don't know.
You could always do it and cut it if you can't.
maybe. You know what? He told me, and it's not going to be used for an article anytime soon. I was talking to Brian Sigurgerson. I don't remember his name. He, from Image and Form, the guys who made SteamWorld Dig. And when I was talking to him about like his project and what his studio is working on, he talked to me a little bit about the next generation platforms. And, you know, they're always about the Nintendo platforms. They love working with Nintendo. Nintendo's very open with them. And, you know, they talked to Sony, and that's the thing, they started talking to Sony and Microsoft at the same time. Sony had a PlayStation 4 dev kit and PlayStation 3, that stuff on their doorstep real quick.
Yeah.
And by time Microsoft was finally, because Microsoft has all their bureaucracy, of all their talks, they moved really slowly. And basically by time Microsoft was ready to start talking, Image and Form basically had a date for SteamWorld Dig coming out on PlayStation 3 or something. And you're right, because of Microsoft's little clauses, it's like, well, I mean, if it's not coming out on Xbox, if you can't make the Xbox version come out on the same day.
That's kind of the crazy thing about The Witness. I mean, Braid was huge with Summer of Arcade. It helped to show that an indie game could have some subset of a mass appeal. And now the next game, by the same creator, cannot be on Xbox simply because they didn't reach out to him. He didn't start developing on the Xbox. He started developing on the PS4.
Well, and the funny thing is, right, that as much as Microsoft is trying with indie games, the thing that people forget, and others just don't realize, is that like Microsoft kind of spit in the faces of indies when the Xbox One was first announced. It was only in regards to massive backlash that they created their Xbox ID program at all, and that was basically in response to Sony just going indie crazy last year, which I think is amazing. And what, like, the funny thing is, eventually it's supposed to be theoretically even easier to develop games on Xbox One as an indie, because a future update is actually going to make it so that you can turn any Xbox One console into a dev kit. You don't actually need to get a specific dev kit from Microsoft anymore, but that's not ready yet. And that launch parity clause is the one little vestige of arrogance that they had, where they were like, hey, here's this program we threw together after ignoring you guys for so long, but oh, we're still going to try to lock you to us. And
well, it's not even
Sony has just been so aggressive on that most of the indies are just kind of flipping them off and going, well, screw you. Sony's treating us well now.
The thing is, it was even before the Xbox One, even, because I remember they turned off XNA even. They just stopped. Well, they stopped making updates for it.
They stopped developing it. Yeah.
Yeah. They stopped with XNA, and XNA is what was there for independent developers to begin with. And then they're like, well, yeah, I mean, we're tired of this. Like, and you could tell too, because Xbox Marketplace, the only things they were advertising was stuff published by like Ubisoft and stuff. So. Yeah. I mean,
and they have some stuff, like they did have some stuff from like Capybara and stuff like that. But those are developers that have worked with Microsoft before and that have a very, very good relationship with them already. So that's why they're doing that. But the majority of the ones like Sony had a huge showing from Devolver Digital, who were not even, you know, not even mentioned slightly at Microsoft, because Devolver was treated so much better that they've just gone whole hog in with Sony. And I think that's I think Microsoft, that's something they can fix, but I think they need to do that definitely sooner rather than later.
Well, they're going to have to want to fix it. I mean, I recall a conversation I believe we all had at one point about after they announced the consoles themselves, do smaller indie games sell units?
I think at least what my answer probably was back then is probably still the case, which is that I don't necessarily think many people will buy an Xbox One for a particular indie game, but I think it gets you a lot more, I think it makes a certain platform to someone who's judging it on a number of different merits probably more appealing and probably adds a lot of value and gets people who own a system already to buy a lot more stuff for it, which also benefits them because they get a cut of everything. And I think that's the case. Like, I don't know how many people are buying Vitas for indie games, but I'll tell you right now, the reason that my Vita hasn't ended up on a classified site is because of all the indie games that are on it that I can cross buy.
I honestly don't. At this point, maybe once I did, but at this point, I don't know how to if I have an answer for this question. Because I don't really know. I do know, however, that just like Sony is looking to fill their release schedule up with indie games that people can go to, Nintendo's kind of doing the same thing. Like, you can see they're definitely putting eShop. Like, I loaded up the Miiverse, and they had a game that my roommate played on the Ouya already called It'll Do, right on the Miiverse right there. And, I mean, it's a decent enough game. It's pretty fun. But that's the thing, like, they just put it, boom, as soon as you boot up your your Wii U, bam, you have an indie game looking at you. And so yeah. I think Nintendo knows to really rely on that stuff now, too, especially based on what, Brian from Image of Form was telling me about his interactions with the three different companies. And Sony and Nintendo know that indies are going to make a big difference. And if you go to Nintendo's YouTube channel, they have all kinds of videos and trailers for indie games.
Yeah. I hope, yeah, and it's really cool because that's the thing. I don't necessarily think, at least at this point, indies can sell hardware, but I think eventually there's big potential for having a strong indie catalog being able to potentially move some units. And I think anyone who doesn't put a lot of effort into courting indie developers does so potentially at their own peril.
I also think from I completely agree with you, but I also think from a little bit of a different take on it, a number of indies that we're seeing are developers who previously worked for larger companies. Yes. A lot of these indies potentially may one day be working at larger companies again. The games industry is a pretty fluid industry in terms of how talent goes. A lot of this is about relationships, and it's about having the right kind of conversations. And that's what Sony gets. That's why you get Devolver at part of the Sony presentation. And long term, it's a smart strategy.
All right. I'm sorry to cut it off there, but we are over time. So to wrap up this E3 discussion, I don't think we'll be doing a part two. Maybe we will, but let's just wrap it up here for now. To finish off, everyone, like, just give me a quick thought. Like, what is your one Microsoft exclusive title you really want? Your one Sony exclusive, your one Nintendo exclusive, and then a multi-platform title that you really want. Just, Jerry, go. What do you want?
For Microsoft, I'm going to say probably Sunset Overdrive. For Sony, exclusive, I'm probably for exclusive, I'm probably going to say Bloodborne, just because I've actually kind of gotten into Souls games lately. And for Nintendo, I'm probably going to, for exclusive, I think I'm going to probably go with, well, the Bayonetta collection, I guess, the Bayonetta 1 and 2 combo pack, because I love Bayonetta 1 and 2 is looking badass. And for multi-platform exclusive, it's funny, I haven't actually thought about what my most interesting one is for that, but for multi-platform exclusive, it's a weird thing to say because I'm on record as not being a big fan of either Bungie or Halo, but what I have seen of Destiny looks friggin' amazing, and I actually got an alpha invite to that for PS4, so I'm curious to see if I'm right on that.
Stream it. Are you allowed to stream it?
I hope so. If you're not allowed, the console will not allow you, so if the console says I can do it, I'm going to try.
All right, that would be interesting to see. All right, how about you, Woodward?
For Microsoft, my game would be Inside, which is by Playdead, and looks super intriguing.
That's the Limbo people, right?
It is. It looks
decidedly depressing.
It does. It looks like Limbo, except for when he leans against glass and breathes, you can see his breath.
That's cool.
It looks super interesting to me. For Sony, I'm going to cheat and say Grim Fandango, because I never played it.
That's a good one, too, though that is coming to PC, too, apparently, eventually.
Yeah, it is. Being able to play it on a handheld sounds like a great idea for me.
Very true.
For Nintendo, this probably isn't really what I mean, but I'm going to say Toad, Captain Toad, because I am so excited that he's getting his own game for no reason other than the fact that why are they doing that?
Those puzzle parts of 3D World were actually really, really excellent, and I told my girlfriend about that game, and she's really excited to try that too, actually.
It seems a little bit whiny, but I still am stoked about that. But the game that I probably will end up purchasing over any of those that I'm really interested in is Evolve, and super happy to hear so many people say they played the game and it plays well.
I actually, Evolve might have been something I would have picked as well. Yeah, that looks really good.
Slap your hand. Yeah. Slap your hand.
That's a game I'm going to play on PC, but yeah, it looks really good.
All right. And as for me, I've already said it, Fable Legends, just four-player fantasy role-playing co-op. That's my bread and butter, or it would be if it, you know, actually existed elsewhere. Sony, I'm actually kind of tempted to say the Powers TV show.
Interesting.
No, probably, honestly, Infamous First Light, simply because I'm still wanting to play Infamous Second Son, and I love Infamous.
I'll tell you this about that. Second Son is very good, but I'll also say that the character that First Light is based around is a character you meet in the Infamous Second Son story, and seeing her arc expanded, I think, is going to be really cool.
For Nintendo, now this is actually really tough, because I'm going to be honest, man. Between Smash Brothers, Captain Toad, and Bayonetta 2, I don't know how to decide, but honestly, I really am torn between Bayonetta and Captain Toad. I don't know which one to say.
There can only be one.
There can only be one, and I don't know which one. I'm going to have to go with Bayonetta 2 just because that's coming out first. But, I'm getting, like, all those games. I'm getting Smash Brothers. I'm getting Hyrule Warrior. I'm getting Bayonetta. Like, I'm getting them all. But, yeah, Bayonetta right now is what I'm kind of most excited for just because I want another action game like that. Which is funny because I liked the original Bayonetta, but I didn't love it. And that had an I just didn't get where all the gushing and love came from for the game. So, all right, and for multi-platform, you know, normally I'd kind of say Destiny here, especially because it looks like it's everything I loved about Halo 1 in a bigger world with more expansive co-op. But Rise of the Tomb Raider. I mean, I really dug Tomb Raider playing that last year. I mean, I really I really love playing it. But what I kind of really like about Rise of the Tomb Raider is if it follows what the trailer suggests, we're going to finally have a video game character that is going to therapy for the things they did in the first game and is now probably facing the fact that they're an adrenaline junkie. And I love everything about that. I mean, I don't
screw that up, Square, please, because that could be done very well, but it could be really boned up too if they're not careful.
If they have Rihanna Pratchett writing, I mean,
yeah,
I think
she could do it.
I think she's mostly known because everyone loves Terry Pratchett, and of course because she, you know, clearly likes video games and stuff. But I mean,
she does. She does some pretty amazing writing. I think she could do it.
She's some good writing. I think she can do it because I think, because of her credentials, she actually understands storytelling in a way that a lot of video games writers don't. And I think the Tomb Raider, the reboot, really showed that in a lot of ways. So, Rise of the Tomb Raider, you know what? Technically, Mirror's Edge 2 would have been it, but too late. No takebacks.
Yeah, and there's not another. And yeah, I'd like to know more about that too, but that's a good one too.
Plus, that'll probably be another year or two before we find out that it's free to play and then canceled.
Oh, God.
God damn you.
Just end it if they're going to do that.
All right. Speaking of just ending, all right, it's time to wrap things up. So, Woodward, where can people find you on the internet?
I record on the Principled Uncertainty podcast, and I like to haunt Gamers with Jobs forums.
And you don't even pay attention to your demon boxing blog anymore, do you?
I will. I have a plan.
So, yeah, you can find the podcast, though, at principleduncertainty.libsyn or libsyn, whatever it's with Y, .com. And how about you, Jerry?
Best place to find a lot of my stuff is at geekbravado.com, but the big thing I'm doing right now is I'm actually doing my second Retro Flashback Play series, which is a complete playthrough of a retro title. I'm actually doing Tron 2.0 right now from 2003. I actually have another part of that uploading as we speak. And it's so I'm working through that. I'm doing general retro flashback stuff as well. And I'm hoping my channel actually just recently got partnered with Creator X Network. So I'm actually hoping that that's going to lead to some more interesting stuff coming there soon. But that's the big stuff I'm doing right now. And I'll probably do an E3 blog post at some point as well, too.
All right, and as for me, you can find me at gamertag.net as usual. You can find me on the gamerswithjobs.com front page. Hopefully by the time this goes up, we might have an E3 post up there. And if not, you can always check my post, The Ending, which generated a really interesting and extensive conversation in the comments. In fact, you know, go for the article, stay for the comments, because there's a lot of talk about awesome stuff. Just oh man, we go into so much discussion about narrative and gameplay and mechanics and all that crisscrossing.
It's not very often you can advise to stay for the comments,
dude.
Nope.
I've got the golden touch, it seems, on Gamers with Jobs, but
it's one of the few sites where you can usually say no, stick around for the comments, it's good. Yep.
And as usual, you can go to youtube.com/user/ramblepack64. I don't have anything new up yet. That was probably one of the big victims of my sudden step away from video games for a little bit. But I'm working on getting new stuff together, and I'm probably going to start a new game to record so I can have a new video up shortly after that. So, all right, everyone, that should be it. And the music for today is the Dark World theme from A Link Between Worlds on the Nintendo 3DS. So, all right, everyone, have a good night. Thanks for listening.